Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are in a noisy halfway through the month moment.
Yeah, very noisy moment here. We're in New York, actually. Well, I'm in New York, and we're live here from, it's live from New York. It's DH Live. How do you like that? It's kind of like a Saturday Night Live thing, but from New York.
Yeah, I thought that was a good experiment. You brought your gear down there, and you hooked up some new stuff, and you took a big chance.
Yep. So it's working pretty well, because otherwise I would have to catch a flight back to Florida in order to do this and back up here.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. Let me tell you a little bit of a market update here, what's going on. So we had a big week last week. Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 568 points, 2.5% almost, to 24,000, just under 25,000. It tried to get up there. Standard Poor's Index gained about 2.4%. The NASDAQ climbed 2.7%. So a lot of exciting things were going on. The U.S. Pulling out of the Iran nuke deal somehow got people all excited. And it was, you would think that was going to, it's just like Brexit and Trump being elected and all the different things that everybody thought, oh, finally going to be the end of the market. And nope. Market said, we're good. Crude oil rallied, which gave a major boost to the oil sector. And that's pretty much what's going on with regard to, I think, the S&P when, you know, the laggard for the last few years in the area of earnings has clearly been the energy sector. And with the fact that now all of a sudden we have a situation where the energy sector is actually going to be helping the overall earnings, I think that's a good thing. So I think that's was help. But we just wait a few days and things start getting a little bit wanky. Stock sold off today for some reason. Do you have any idea why?
No reason.
Yeah, pretty much no reason.
Well, there was one thing. The only news item that may have affected the market was that Manafort's attempt to get out of his suit by the government, because it had nothing to do with the Russia investigation, got thrown out. So he's going to go up on charges.
Mm. So that's going to be a problem.
So I'm not sure that.
Then everybody's worrying if he's going to flip and he has some information and something like that, right?
Yeah.
There was some headlines.
There may be something to discover in discovery. Maybe they're worried. I have no idea.
Well, there's some headlines. There was maybe blaming Home Depot because they were issuing some soft guidance outward. And we saw the 10-year Treasury. This was something. The 10-year Treasury yields pushed pretty hard today. Levels not seen since 2011. I think it closed very close to 3.1%. So that was maybe something. And we saw the healthcare and tech shares kind of got whacked, and that was a problem. CPI came in last week a bit softer than expected, and everybody was all excited about that. We don't have runaway inflation. That means the Fed can stay very active, and the economy's not overheating. So we got the bad is good and the good is bad thing going on. Mm. So CPI came in, and that was I think, important for the whole markets in total, where they got a really good drive higher. I think that last week, if we count all the days, the Dow was higher. Wow, you're really coming in hot here. I got to reduce down something here. I don't even know what to do. Okay. The Dow was up, I think, 8 days in a row last week.
Yeah, there was some sort of record.
Yeah, so I think it was maybe due for a bit of a correction. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do here with your sound. I got to push this down a little.
The background sound is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, but I'm not worried about your background sound. I'm worried about the fact that you're coming in really hot on my recording. So I'm going to reduce you down a little bit here and pump up your volume here. So Anyway, can you give me a couple of bars? Give me a couple of hymns. Give me a couple of noises.
Yeah, I can go back to the dog story.
No, please don't. We're good now. Anything but the dog story.
The dog story.
So, we had the VIX that was starting to come in pretty nicely. As a matter of fact, last week, the VIX closed down at 1265.
Back to normal.
Yeah, back to the levels that were acceptable just a couple of months back. Remember that it was down up at about 50, And there was the thought that, oh, we're going to get back to the whole idea where we're going to see those sub-10s again. And then there's, you know, things kind of got better. And now all of a sudden we're back to updating. Today was up about 13.5% to $14.63. So still not the high levels, but not low either. I put a little VIX chart on there for you. You can see the recent history as of yesterday. All these charts available on dhunplugged.com. Is episode number, what episode is this? 408. So when this comes live, you'll see that. Hey, chat room, how's everything sounding there? Can you hear John okay? Of course, we're live here. So
can you hear me okay?
Yeah, can you hear him okay? I need some help from the chat room here. So
it takes about 5 seconds before they hear anything.
Right, exactly. Let's see what else we got here. All right, some of the reasons we're seeing stocks also is the love of the economy. So Standard & Poor's 500 companies are on track to announce, check this out, $650 billion worth of buybacks this year. $650 billion.
Yeah, they were talking about that on most of the news or the stock market analysis shows. It's pretty. Everyone's all going, wow, it's like a record or something, and it's out of control.
Yeah. It was a record. The last record that it surpassed was back in 2007 when we saw $589 billion worth of buybacks. Now, those people that want to fight this are saying, hey, you know what? But markets were a lot lower back then. Stocks were a lot cheaper back then. So now you got to put a lot more into it to meet up. So this really, this record can be diluted a bit with the thought that, you know, there's a lot less, you know, a lot less in comparison. So they're kind of playing it down a little bit, saying, oh, it's not all the stock buybacks that are pushing the markets up, which is bullshit. We know that there's, you know, the buybacks are a big part of this whole game.
Yes, totally. It has to be doing something.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. And what's interesting is I think you'll find this interesting. So there was a study done and commissioned by, I don't know who it was, maybe Goldman or somebody, saying that buybacks offer investors an effective yield of about 3%. They calculate this by dividing repurchases by the $23 trillion market value of the Standard & Poor's 500 index. And you compare that, or you combine that with the 1.9% current yield. So you have about this buyback of 3%. That's what it gives you, because you're going to boost up the share price and you're going to possibly buy about 3% just by buybacks. And you look at the 1.9% current dividend yield, and investors should get it at least 5% combined for this year.
Unless the stock tanks.
Yeah, that's correct. So, right. So,
for other reasons.
Right. So, this is just, so therefore, you have to have a downdraft of at least 5% in order to net zero, according to this calculation, or maybe 3%. Because then you get rid of the yield. You know, you just have the yield only.
Well. Until something bad happens, this is going to continue.
Yep. So on top of that, North Korea, this is some good news last week. North Korea is getting closer to some sort of deal. Now, I want you to forget about what happened any time before today. So we saw that North Korea is going to get closer to some kind of deal. Denuclearization, whatever that exactly means, is going to be welcomed. And sanctions are going to be dropped. And all this great stuff. As a matter of fact, we're telling them that there's going to be just a massive amount of economic love affair from the U.S. and the private businesses into North Korea if they get rid of their nukes.
Yeah.
So basically,
we're going to put our banks in there and help them out, show them the way.
Yeah, we're going to show them how it is. So now we're going to go from 6 months ago where they were providing all sorts of did you see some of those animations they had of how their bombs would rain over the United States and destroy the United States?
No, I didn't. I missed that. Oh, that North gem.
Yeah, North Korea put out all this propaganda, and it was very clearly showing how they were going to annihilate the U.S. with these new missiles that they have this long-range capability. And we're going to go from that to, hey, you should be getting an American, you know, putting an American Express booth and a Visa booth in every corner, and not to mention electricity for everybody. And, of course, Amazon will get in there, and everybody's just going to have, you know, everything they need. Starbucks on every corner in North Korea. Possible?
Well, if they open the border, first they're going to sign a peace agreement. Then if they can open the border, this will be fun to watch.
Do you think that Kim Jong-un has just totally said, you know what? What the hell am I doing here? I'm ostracized by everybody. They're clamping down on China. Everybody's pissed off. What are we doing here? Let's just take the money and have fun.
I think there's an element of that because you've got to remember, and I don't know why they never mentioned it. Just everyone describes in the media as just some sort of a madman. They don't mention that he was schooled in Switzerland and spent most of his time before he became the Grand Poobah, spent most of his time in Paris cafes. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So maybe this whole thing that he did was just to try to escalate this all to a point that all he had to do was back off on the potential for his nuclear capabilities and then just get showered upon him all this wondrous wealth. Because Pompeo went over there and said, hey, you know what? We are going to really make this now. They're going to be so wealthy that it's going to rival South Korea. Which I'll be going to in August, by the way.
Oh, you will?
Yeah.
Have you been there before?
I stopped in for a moment.
No, you got to go there. I got a lot of tips. I've been there a couple more. I've been there three times.
Have you been to Jeju Island?
No, I don't go. No,
you don't go there. No, I'm going there too. So I'm going to Shanghai. Oh, okay.
Then you can tell me about it when you get back.
All right. Well, I'm just going to one of the places. The rest of the time I'll spend in the main areas. So here's the deal. The Iran deal was pulled back, which was the worst deal in history. We saw the whole idea that we're going to do some kind of a great deal now that, you know, hoping that they destroy all of their nuclear capabilities and all that. And somehow I'm not sure what we get out of this. What do we get out of this? What are we getting out of this whole North Korea thing?
North Korea?
Yeah. What are we getting out of this?
Nobel Peace Prize for Trump.
Oh, right. That's correct. Because he's got a what up. Okay. Well, but it's starting to get weird. Now, here's the update. It's starting to get a little weird. Here's the update. There's news today of a cancellation of the meeting between North and South Korea due to U.S. military exercises in the area. So there you go.
Well, that's weird.
Yep. But of course,
we're supposed to not do those exercises.
We're not supposed to, but we did. I don't know why we did, to show the strength, to kind of put up our chest again, thump it a little bit and say, hey, you know what? Just to let you know, we need to make this happen. Because if we don't make this happen, then, you know, then what's going to happen is that, you know, we're going to see all sorts of problems again. Just giving you a fair warning. I don't know. The whole thing's kind of weird. Yep.
Well, that could have accounted for the market stumbling a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Towards the end of the day, especially. I don't know why, though, it was the tech and the healthcare shares. Those are the ones that kind of did very well. The tech shares, if the dollar comes up and if the rates come up, I would suspect that the tech, which has been very heavily involved in buybacks, would probably see some stumbling.
Okay.
Because they rely on that. All right. A couple of other things this week. We have retail sales that came out today. Pretty much where it was expected, 0.3% increase. We're going to be seeing housing starts and a few other miscellaneous economic data points, but not a big week. Not a big week at all. Let's see what else I got. All right, so you want to hear about these what I'm doing up here?
Yeah.
So I'm at the Benzinga.
What are you doing?
What am I doing? Aside from going to Chinatown last night, I'm at the Benzinga FinTech Awards. This is I think this is the
FinTech.
FinTech, you know, the buzzword. This is a fifth, I think this is the fifth one they've had. So what they did was, I know the founder of Benzinga, which is a news and research service for investors. And they asked me to come up and meet a few people, but also bring up my rig and interview a lot of the people that will be presenting their pitches, getting awards and all that. I gave an award out tonight. That was kind of nice. So here's a couple people I met with. So today I interviewed Tom Eck, who is the chief technology officer of IBM's Watson division for finance. That was kind of cool. I think you'll like that discussion. A lot of blockchain in that discussion. and John Bartleman, president of TradeStation, Casey Herbert, Hubers, who is the CMO, chief marketing officer of Quicken Loans, and the one who created the Rocket Loans marketing campaign and division. So that was kind of interesting. Am I boring you?
No, keep going. These guys are all fascinating.
Not really, huh? they have all this stuff from Best from FinTech in the areas of lending and lending technology, smart data aggregation. I met with a guy named Kumesh Arumugan. Kumesh Arumugan. He's with Acern. This was interesting. They ingest millions of pages a day of information and data source and news and all this, and to understand what people are thinking about particular stocks or the markets. Their algorithms and, quote, black box and process and AI, you know, whatever. Throw those words in there, whatever those are, right? They're working to help quant funds make decisions. So, for example, they have a daily algo slash process that looks to find out what is the stance of people on investing in terms of their likelihood to buy whatever. And they may give this information to a quant fund to go long or short the S&P 500. And they have another one that gathers information 3 months in advance of an earnings call for retail and finds what people are thinking about their comments, their concerns on social media, as well as on websites for retail. So maybe Macy's is getting all sorts of bad commentary. They gather this, they find out, and they do a weighting of, you know, quality information versus not. And then they give that and sell that to these quant funds that then make investment decisions based on all that. You like it or not?
I really doubt if it's efficient, personally.
I had a good interview. I asked him a few questions.
You can talk a big game when you talk big data, but people, you know, so you get inundated. It's just information overload. You really can't analyze it. I mean, I'm sure that they have a great sales pitch to say they can, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting. I asked him some questions about how to bust it. So what if I was to come in and start just, if I had all these bots and all these different algos, then I went out in there and I started busting up on the retail side of things, right? So what I wanted to do was I went out and I started to okay, so what is, what's coming up with earnings? And what I would do is I would start spewing out all sorts of negative or positive stuff, depending on what I wanted on this. Can I bust your algos? Can I bust your black box? He said no.
Because of course he said no.
Well, I'm just telling you, that's what he said.
Yeah, of course, that's what he'd say.
Okay. So, but it would seem like you could possibly do that, especially if everybody starts. The thing about the algos in general is if everybody knows that there are these algos, don't you think there'll be the anti-algos out there?
Of course, there has to be. That's the way that things go. That's the way it works. That's the way it's always been with this sort of technology software.
Right. So anyway, it's a really good conference. There's some great speakers, some new panels tomorrow I'll be attending and finding out. Just a great, I'll bring you the whole list of the stuff afterwards, but it's pretty cool. You can check out all the stuff over at, bzawards.com. Bzawards.com. So we have somebody listening in on the headphones, by the way. Shh. Can't say anything bad. Great conference. Best conference I've ever been to.
A spy.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about NVIDIA for a second here. So NVIDIA earnings. Shares of NVIDIA came down about 2% last week. On Friday, they were looking through the earnings. They were like, you know, what's going on here? They worried about the short-term surge in demand for graphics chips and maybe there's too many of those boxes that were built for the Bitcoin and for all the, you know, authentication procedures and all that that are basically chewing up all the energy from every country around the world. And looking at maybe it may be undermining its core business with computer gamers, which I don't really see that. But that was kind of some of the issue there. And there was a lot of positive options and opinions out about the stock, but kind of came in a little bit. And stock's been rallying pretty well. So we'll see. I still like NVIDIA. We still own it, actually, with one of our portfolios. So doing well. But let's get into some things that are right up your alley here, okay? Got to follow up on this whole AT&T hoo-ha. This payment.
Yeah, what about it?
Well, this payment, this pay-to-play deal that's going on.
Yeah, they spent $600,000 to get nothing. They don't even sign a warranty for their
Well, does
money.
Does anybody...
they're just throwing money. These companies throw money away like there's no tomorrow. And AT&T is a very good example of that.
But wasn't, I mean, you don't sign with a lobbyist like, okay, you're going to get this deal done for me and I'll pay you the money. That would be bribery, wouldn't it? You're not signing anything with a warranty.
It's not bribery. Or you hire a lobbyist to do a job and they don't do the job.
But
I guess you already paid him.
Right, but isn't that the whole point? You don't really have to necessarily pay them, you know, for in other words, if you paid them to get something done and that would be contingent on getting something done, that would seem to be a little bit more, you know, problematic than if you, you know, here's $600,000.
No, I don't think so.
So do you think
you gave the $600,000 to Trump directly? Yeah, that's called bribery, right. But that's not what you're talking about here.
So do you think that the $600,000 AT&T paid plus the money that Novartis paid and all that is something to be concerned about?
No, well, I'm not concerned about it, and I don't really care. I mean, if those guys got that kind of money to throw away, I'm concerned that they would waste money like that.
Well, but, I mean, there is a new lobbying firm that probably is a lot more effective. By the way, if any of the companies are listening out there, Horowitz, Dvorak, we have a lot of influence, don't we?
Yeah.
If you want to send money our way.
We make a lot of noise on podcasts.
Yeah, you do not, and we won't require them to sign a warranty at all. You know, we're them or us, we're not going to, or we will, for that matter, we'll sign a warranty. We'll sign a warranty, but not a guarantee. A warranty that will do the job. We'll make some calls for you. We have a whole team. So send your money right in, and we take PayPal.
Boiler room
working. We take PayPal.
Boiler
room. I don't think these other guys take PayPal. We take PayPal. All right, let's scoot on over to Asia while we're at it here. So this probably is going to sound a little reminiscent of some of the things you've heard probably back in 2006, 2007. Chinese insurers are now channeling funds through shadow lenders to real estate and local government infrastructure projects in a bid to boost returns. Six insurance and trust sources have told Reuters about this. So basically what they're doing is they're doing an end run, trying to get away from the banking business that is regulated. And they're going into the shadow lenders so that they can make sure they get all that money that flows out there. And this practice basically undermines Beijing's efforts to cut local debt risk and curb the property bubble that's going on there. So this is kind of interesting that we're seeing the continuation of China trying to at least outwardly and overtly clamping down on banks and the lending practices because they know there's a problem with the, you know, we've seen the ghost cities and we've seen the excessive speculation in real estate. And now we're going the same thing that we saw here is this kind of end run around, whether it's securitization or packaging or, you know, doing some kind of bizarre multiple of leverage on this stuff. I mean, it's not going to end very well, is it?
It's just crazy.
Do you think this is going to just keep on going, or is this going to be, you know?
It can't keep on going. We know that.
I don't know what's going to be busting this because it seems to be every time there's you know an answer to one thing. I mean, we did see some of the Chinese numbers come out last night. We're a little bit softer than expectations, but nothing terrible. Still seeing decent global growth across the board in Asia. And I guess it's like this. You know, I remember hearing back when maybe it was Nouriel Roubini or somebody said something to the effect of, you know, when the tide is high and you're in the water, everything looks fantastic. It's nice and clean. It's green. It's wonderful. And, you know, everything looks great. When the tide goes down and it kind of goes to the point of being in the sand, you see all the beer cans and bottles and glass and, you know, used rubbers and all the other stuff that's inside of the, you know, on the bottom. And it hides all that.
Yeah, all the crap.
So I think maybe that's where we are in this whole scenario, that things are good and it's hiding all of it.
Yeah, I think it's as good as analogy as any I've heard.
Yeah, so I don't know who to give exact kudos with. You know, one of the things that's been back to China and stuff, one of the things that's been swirling around here, as a matter of fact, these guys over at Benzinga do a morning show each morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they kind of do a market a recap and a forward look at what's happening for the day and all that. So, as a matter of fact, one of the guys listening on the headphones is the guy that does the program. So, so that's Spencer. Basically, they were talking about it this morning. A big issue was this whole ZTE thing, which, you know, is kind of interesting. We talked about this, I guess maybe last week, where The U.S. Commerce Department last month banned American companies from selling to the firm for 7 years as a punishment to the company for breaking a 2017 agreement after it was caught illegally shipping U.S. goods to Iran and North Korea. So, so this was done, and there was they finally put the clamps down a few weeks ago, and it just, I mean, crushed the stock. It also caused a lot of problems for other optical companies that were using the parts for their phones and all that. Anybody related to them that was working with them got hit also. And President Trump on Sunday, out of nowhere, I don't know where this came from, he says, you know what? We're in a tweet, we're going to help get ZTE Corp back in business fast. He says, too many jobs are lost in China. Too many jobs in China lost. Commerce Department has been instructed to get it done. Now, I don't know about you, but I do recall the whole thing was, wait a minute, too many jobs are being created in China at the expense of jobs in the U.S. Is that?
Yes, that was the litany.
That was a thing, right? That was a thing. And now what's happening is that we're going and we're trying to help them after they broke these agreements. Some of it just doesn't make so much sense to me. I don't know. I'm a little lost.
Well, somebody, you know, it would be nice if at a press conference, when they had these press conferences at the White House, they talk about stuff like this rather than the latest Stormy Daniels thing.
Oh, you know what? I'm away from the major TV because I'm working and doing all this stuff the last couple of days. I'm so pleased. I haven't heard anything about Stormy Daniels in like 2 days. I feel like something has been relieved from my, you know, I'm so sick of hearing about it. She's making out on it, and her attorney is a media whore. Have you ever seen anybody? He goes on Twitter. I started following him to see what he's talking about. He goes on Twitter begging to be followed, not followed, and also begging, more importantly, begging. You know what? I shouldn't say anything about him. I'll probably sue my ass. But he begs.
He's one of those guys. You should be careful.
My understanding is I heard from a reliable source that, but I've seen he wants to be on Sean Hannity's show. Why aren't you inviting me, Sean? I want to talk. You know? Anyway, so this whole thing is a little backwards. You know, you do hope that they get their index cards straight one day where we could have a, you know, and markets I think would like this too. Markets I think would like to have a consolidation of the information that is consistent. That we don't have one day us, you know, canceling this because they broke this agreement, and 2 days, 3 days later, coming back and saying, you know what? No, not a problem. Unless our long-term thesis is still true.
Somebody's playing the stock offshore.
Right? There you go.
That's exactly how it works.
Let's crush it one day and come back on a Sunday where they're going to squeeze it on the Monday hard. Yep, you got it. Yep.
That's their only reasonable explanation.
Yeah.
And it does explain the whole thing.
So let's just put a nice bow on top of that and leave that to the fact file of what we believe really happened. All right, coming up on 10 years from the financial crisis, there's a guy named Steven Eisman. Now, you probably know him. He was the guy that predicted the collapse of subprime. He was the Big Short. Remember that?
Yeah, the Big Short guy.
And then afterwards he came out with, hey, unbelievable how there's so much of a opportunity now to buy the banks. So he went full circle. He went from hating the banks, they're going to crash, they're going to correct, they're going to go out of business. I'm shorting them. I'm doing all sorts of things with these, you know, unbelievable levels of protection for bankruptcy that we're going to go short on and all this stuff. Or go long on those and short the banks. And then he comes back a few years later, starts loving the banks. Now, this is the first time I heard this from him. He says that Deutsche Bank is a problem bank, and he's shorting them. He said the German lender...
I'm going to short it for our game.
Ah, that's DB, symbol DB. He says the German lender has a profitability issue, and we'll probably have to raise capital next year.
Didn't we know this for the last couple of years? Yeah, Deutsche Bank talked about it already.
Deutsche Bank has been. I think we shorted that and Credit Suisse for the game.
Yeah,
they look terrible.
Yeah, they do. But the problem is they're kind of national banks. Or I mean, it's even though it's not really owned by the government, It's like one of these things. I have made this mistake before. I had predicted that Nortel, which is bankrupt, was really the pride of Canada. And there was never anything bad that was going to happen to it. And so you could never short it to zero. But it turned out that the pride of Canada was must have been something else.
Carnotzel. Smoked meat. That's the pride of Canada, smoked meat. You like smoked meat?
Smoked meat?
Isn't it called smoked meat out of Canada? Yeah. It's where they
I don't know about that. I don't know what smoked meat out of Canada is.
It's the smoked meat. It's the brisket.
Can we smoke our own meat in this country?
Yeah, but that we have corned beef here. There they call it smoked meat. They make it more with cloves. It's like a clovey flavor. Oh. Smoked meat. You're right on the corner of the Canada. Why aren't you, your wife has a deli or something, didn't she?
No, the deli's closed, but okay. I don't know of any smoked meat in Vancouver.
Hey, you know what? You got to
could be wrong. I mean, just beef jerky?
No, that's Carnotzel. Carnotzel is beef jerky.
No. Okay. No. I know nothing of these things. Is this some Jewish thing?
No, it's not a Jewish thing. And how dare you?
It's not Jewish.
That's it. I'm out of here. Jeez. That's crazy. All right, let's move on. Facebook announcing that about 200 apps have been suspended pending a thorough investigation into whether or not they misused any data. What do you think?
The horse is out of the barn.
And?
So, I mean, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but they've already been suspended.
Yeah, so that's done. All right, Supreme Court strikes down a federal. This is interesting. You'll find this interesting, I think. Yeah, the chat room's Montreal smoked meat. It's only, I guess, on this side of town.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll send you some.
Okay.
I'm going to send you a package. I got to write that down.
I'm always looking for a package.
Yeah, I know. And by the way, speaking of packages, you know those new razors that I use? The fancy razors, the single edge?
Yeah, what about them?
Schmucko decided that I was going to take it on the strip with me. With an extra pack of razors, just in case I wanted to use a fresh razor. How far do you think that made it?
Yeah, they got it right down to the, as he was entering the airport, it probably worked out.
It worked out really well. And then I was panicked because I thought they were going to take my whole razor. I'm like, why would you take that? And he's like, no, we're just unscrewing it to take the razor blade out. But I will tell you, and this is a true story, they were doing a bag check for me. In front of me was a woman. She was in like a wheelchair kind of thing. And they were pushing around the airport. They were inspecting her bag first. I'm not kidding about what I'm about to tell you here. They wanted to see what was in the bag. And I think they did it just for the embarrassment of it. Okay? And she pulled out, let's just call it a full body massager out of her bag.
Yeah, there's a rumor going around that if they see something like that in X-ray, they always inspect the bag so they can try to embarrass the person.
Yeah.
Adam has a microphone that looks like a dildo on an X-ray machine. And he says they're always disappointed to find that he has a microphone.
Well, this woman had a full on. I mean, this was a powerful looking thing. And then, I mean, she kind of looked at her and I gave her like a little wink. I'm like, hey, you know, nice.
Gave her a wink.
Yeah, a little wink. Nice.
Nice.
On to the regular stories here, the regular scheduled stories. Supreme Court strikes down federal law against sports betting. Did you see the story?
Yeah, this has been the number one story on all the sports talk radio stations, ESPN, everyone.
They're all into it.
They're trying to analyze is good or bad. They think it's going to be really good for baseball.
Why just baseball? For the fantasy leagues?
It's because baseball is such a slow game, relatively speaking, that you can make all these bets during the game.
Oh, and then you could also probably just, when a game is going and it's really boring, at least you have something to,
People are going to be all into the whole thing. It's harder to do with basketball, they say, because there's too much action.
Right. I guess they could do all sorts of very strange bets too, you know, those sideline bets, you know, like, How many
pitches is this guy coming out this inning? There's a million things. So baseball has the ultimate number of possibilities.
Mm. Okay. Well, any state will now be free to permit sports betting or pass a law to prohibit it, by the way. So
Well, no state, and it's right. Well, I mean, there'll be a few prudish states like Utah that'll probably prohibit it, but they don't haven't got a baseball team anyway.
Yeah.
But the most of the cities will probably, or states will pass some sort of a law because they can get some taxes out of the deal.
Yep. So also already New Jersey has began planning for this ruling, and
they should have it. The whole ruling was about New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, but it's going to be available for any state now to do this. Now, the stocks that may see the most reaction to this, okay, if the Supreme Court declares the law unconditional, are the casino names, and we put this here, mostly the ones that are outside of Las Vegas, where sports betting is already legal. So we have a chart that we put up here. You can take a look at this. This is actually brought to us from briefing.com. Mm. And you can see that Penn National Gaming, the chart shows the casino name. Again, these are all available on DH Unplugged episode 408 over on dhunplugged.com. But you can take a look at the casino name there, and you see Penn National Gaming. And on the right side is the domestic exposure outside of Nevada. So Penn National Gaming has the most. About 95% of their gaming is outside of Nevada. Therefore, they potentially can have the most opportunity from this. Then you go down to Boyd Gaming and Caesars and MGM. But Red Rock, Wynn, Las Vegas, they're all, you know, either in Vegas or somewhere else outside the country. Las Vegas and Wynn in particular have a lot of their revenues that are outside the country, whether it's from Singapore or Macau. Cotai Strip. So that's on there. All right, now, in order to bring you this wonderful show on a regular basis, on a weekly basis at 9 o'clock live, and then of course available on your favorite podcast. What we call those repositories?
Podcast app.
Yeah, podcast apps.
And podcast. I think app.
Yep. We rely on you, obviously. So if you love the show, if you're making money for some of the weekly stock picks, get a little laugh here and there, getting a chuckle about the dildo in the line, whatever it may be. Make sure to donate. Go over to DH Unplugged. Click on the donate button. And actually, when you click on that donate button, here's something interesting. We did this week. This is amazing. When you click that donate button this week, it turns into a dildo. Seriously, did you see that? You saw that, right? When I put that on there, Johnny?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, when you click the button, you'll see. Go over to DH Unplugged, click the donate button. It turns into a dildo. It swaps out to a dildo for this week. So go do that. And by the way, if you want to get a one of a kind, only to be given out if you win the DH Unplugged Close to the Pin t-shirt. We have this new thing where, and a few people have taken us up on this, you can get a t-shirt for the price of the show. So this show is number 408. So if you donate $408 after you see the dildo up here, you will actually get a signed t-shirt from myself and John. And of course, all the things that come with that, which is just a lot of love and kindness and actually good things. Anything to say about that?
I'm not commenting on this dildo assertion.
No? You don't believe it? Or you haven't? Or you don't like it?
I'm just not saying anything.
All right. We have one limerick this week. I think we had one more from somebody
only
else.
Only one is from you.
I think I may be able to pull it. Let me see if I can possibly. Yeah, I got a limerick here. All right. I got something here. All right. I got one that from Simon Davies that came in late, or came in yesterday to post it. But I'll read his first, even though it's not on the site, and I'll republish it. You ready?
Yeah.
Here's one with swearing for John. Okay, there we go. Paul Volcker once was the man. Then came the maestro Greenspan. Bernanke and Yellen dug a hole which they fell in. Now they should duck when the shit hits the fan.
Excellent.
Oh, excellent. Oh,
I thought
great.
That
wait,
was
wait.
An A. Solid A.
Solid A. Chat room, what do you think about that? Solid A. We got people listening here that says Simon Davies does it, pulls it off an A, not an A minus. We've never seen an A plus, but not even as an A, which is, I think, one of the top grades ever. I don't even want to read mine now.
Solid A.
Oh, all right. Very good. Okay, that's good. I'm happy about that. All right, here's mine.
And the obscenity, as mild as it was appropriate for a limerick.
Right. We got some A's in the chat room as well. All right, here's mine. I don't even want to do this, okay? Prices are rising, but inflation is tame. The Fed excuses are bogus and quite lame. One thing is for sure, and we all will abhor, they will say the weather is to blame.
Not your best.
Not my best.
And I would also say if you took the word quite out of the second line.
Yeah. Maybe it would have.
It would be tighter and better.
All right. Some people are giving me shit in the chat room. Let me go without the word quite. Prices are rising, but inflation is tame. The Fed's excuses are bogus and lame. One thing is for sure, and we all will abhor. They will say the weather is to blame. See, that's the sentence that's a problem. We need a little bit extra.
Yeah, it's no good.
Right. We need like.
Yeah, you have to rewrite this.
I got to rewrite this. It's not good. This is.
I'm giving you a D.
A D? Oh, killing me. Killing me. Horowitz gets a D. Oh. All right. Okay. All right. All right. We have, which you owe me, by the way. You owe me your price guess for Baidu, which will be closing for all new guesses on the Close to the Pin this Friday. And the winning price will be revealed. And the winner on the 25th. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, oh no, somebody said that Tanya won, but how could that be? It's open for entries. Wait, somebody said in the chat room that Dame Tanya was the closest.
But well, if it's not close, she's not the winner.
Yeah, so she can't be the winner. She can't be close yet. So I don't know what that means. I don't know. It can't be on this one because this one's not even open yet. Let's see what else we got here. Anyway, so you need to send me your price guess, Mr. John.
I will do that right after the show.
Okay, thank you. Let's see here. I got to close something. I got to open it back. All right, here we go. Okay. Rolls Royce has officially entered into the off-road territory, the category of SUV.
Can you imagine?
It's true. Can I imagine? I'm telling you. I even got you a picture. It's called, the $325,000 base model Cullinan. Whatever Cullinan is. Let's see. It means something.
It's a good-looking car. I mean, from the back, I don't see a front view. It probably looks like got that big, stupid grill. This seems a little high for an SUV.
So it weighs 5,864 pounds.
It's too heavy.
500 pounds heavier than the Bentayga. What do? They try to make the names of this so difficult to pronounce that you just give up? Bentayga.
I'm pretty sure than the... But who makes the Bentayga?
I don't know. Oh, 4 inches taller is closer to the Bentayga. I don't know. Who's that one? Maybe that's Mercedes? Somebody look up, or maybe that's... Somebody look up who
maybe
makes the...
Maybe it's a Bentley.
Maybe it's a Bentley. Look up the Bentayga.
Yeah, I think that's got to be
Oh, that's probably Bentley. Yeah, Bent. Bentayga.
Bent.
Yeah,
Bent. And then Lamborghini's got a Uranus.
Do they?
That's what it says. Yeah. That's what it says in this list. Mm. Oh, no, Urus. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's better. They have the Urus, not the Uranus. Yeah. So.
What a name. What is Cullinan? Where did they come up with this idea?
It's something about something, like some animal or something, or I don't know.
I'm sure I'll get to see a few of them around the Bay Area.
So one of the options it has in the car is two rear-facing seats off the back, and a fold-out picnic table.
Yeah, why should that even be an option at that price?
Yeah, I mean, why can't you just throw that in for the hell of it, right? For 300-something
thousand? Seems so, yeah. $325,000? I mean, geez. What does a Maybach cost? I guess it cost $1 million.
I wonder what the gas mileage is. Probably like four miles.
Probably more like five.
Yeah, being kind. crazy. Steve Wynn. Steve Wynn is, you know, his name is coming off the Boston, I think it's the Boston properties they're building. I think it's Boston, Massachusetts property, yeah. You know, he's now been extricated from the Wynn dynasty, his company, they bought him out.
Yeah, he builds it. This poor guy, this happened to him twice now.
Yeah, so he's out. He's done. So now.
That's okay. You know, he'll start over.
He will. Well, he's starting over with some money because he's going to be selling a Picasso, which is $70 million estimated to be received at auction.
But I think he used to always display that thing at the Bellagio. I don't know what happened to that.
It was damaged on Friday somehow. So the auction can't take place till it's fixed.
Somebody take a shot at it?
I don't know. I think it was moved around something. But here's a funny thing. a few, like about 12 years ago, he also tried to sell another masterpiece, but right before he sold it, I guess he put his elbow through it.
Yeah, so, I remember that story.
Poor guy. How does this happen? I mean, realize the care that you take in just your laptop or your phone. You know what I'm saying? We're talking about a $70 million painting. Who's ripping holes in it? I mean, what are they possibly
doing?
Well,
he's probably collecting insurance. That's what he would use for the investment.
Ooh, double dipping.
Yeah, maybe.
Interesting.
I mean, you don't have to sell the Picasso if you can collect $10 million in damages and then just keep it. He likes his art.
Yes, definitely likes his art if he's got pieces worth that much. And I guess he got that in the settlement that he can keep all that.
But yeah, I was very skeptical about it.
$70 million for Picasso. Would you spend that kind of money? I guess if you had it, you would.
If I had a couple billion bucks in the bank, I might.
Yeah. That does it for you, right?
But I would have gone to the big auction back east of David Rockefeller, sold off his entire collection. It wasn't covered very much in the United States press. But he sells off a collection of some fantastic pieces that he owned in his house. He almost got $1 billion from all the sales. I think $600 million or something like that.
Yeah, I think he sold off everything in the house, didn't they?
Yeah, he sold off the whole house, including this china, everything.
Wow, that's good. That could have been fun. All right, let's finish up in Hawaii. A couple of things outside the area of the U.S. again. We got Hawaii. We got more destructive lava flows hitting the Big Island. Have you been there, by the way, the Big Island?
Oh, yeah. I went there during one of the earlier eruptions, and we flew over the thing spewing lava, and then it was flowing out on a tube out to the ocean and falling into the ocean. It's very spectacular.
Wow. I've been there. It's probably pretty cool. I played some golf there,
yeah,
which is nice because they have these courses that have this lush green fairways, and outside of the fairway is lava. You can't get your ball
once
a kid goes there. But it's really cool because you got that cool coloration of the, you know, the green and the black. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's very pretty. So the island is filled is just crawling with cockroaches.
Is that what? Why is that the only thing that could survive volcanoes?
The Big Island.
Really?
I don't know why. Yeah.
Is that real?
We rented a car there, and it was filled with cockroaches, and there's cockroaches everywhere. It's horrible. And then when we were leaving, getting on the airplane, I said to my wife, I said, check your purse to make sure there's not a bunch of cockroaches in there.
Oh, don't say it.
And she says to me, no, that's closed. There's no way there's any cockroaches in there. I said, dump the stuff out. Let's take a look. She dumps out at least 10 cockroaches head
that's
for the hills.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Totally disgusting. But true.
What, did you stay in a fine hotel or did you stay in a crap
hole? We stayed in a nice place, but that wasn't covered with roaches, but they had these very strange ants, the likes of which I've never seen before. They were like Argentinian ants, only they're about one-tenth the size. They're extremely small and fast. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Like crazy ants? Do they bite? But, do they have those
no,
piercers?
They don't bite. None of these ants bite. Mm. But it's like the island's crazy. It's a crazy place.
Yeah, it's nice to go. It's fun. So anyway, we're seeing that there are these massive volcanoes. There's supposedly these chunks of lava now are spewing out the size of refrigerators and causing all sorts of problems. Magma is running down streets underground. More fissures are opening. Toxic gases are coming out. It's just all sorts of nastiness. So I suppose that we're going to see probably a slowdown in tourism in Hawaii, blamed for the unusual weather and...
most people don't go to the Big Island for tourism. I mean, they go to Kauai, they go to Maui, and they go to Oahu. The Big Island is for golfers and, you know, people, there's some few things there. Nice old town of Hilo. But I suspect I wouldn't go for because if that volcano blows up, as you remember from that Iceland episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where that Iceland volcano blows up, and the next thing you know, you can't fly anywhere within 500 or 1,000 miles of the volcano.
Hmm.
So how would you get home?
Yeah.
You'd be stuck in Hawaii.
Well, not the worst thing in the world, but yeah, if there's assuming that all stuff, I guess. It's very expensive down there. Very expensive place.
It's isolated.
Finally, the U.S. Embassy officially moves to Jerusalem, and that's causing all sorts of problems. I have some friends from the area. Everybody says the same thing. Nobody knows what the hell this is, you know, what the point of this is.
But the point of what is?
Moving the embassy to Jerusalem.
Well, it's been promised by American presidents for apparently a very long time. And so Trump says, hey, if we're going to say we're going to do it, let's just do it. Well, because Jerusalem's considered the capital by the Israelis.
Well, it's considered the capital by the Israelis, yes. It's also the holy land for the Christians, the Jews, and the Muslims.
Yeah, but should you run the Hotel David, that famous hotel that's in Jerusalem, out of the place? I mean, it's got this huge market. I mean, I've been there. Yeah. They can put an embassy in there. Well, why is it a big? I don't see why it's a big deal, personally.
King David Hotel. Well, tens of thousands of Palestinians.
King David Hotel is a dynamite place.
Dynamite,
by the way.
Love that place. 10,000 of Palestinians converge on the Israeli border in the worst single day of violence there since the 2014 war. So obviously some people are pissed, but they're pissed. They get pissed very easily over there. It's too much hormones and heat and lack of work or something. It's a combination of...
It could be the hummus.
Oh, I got to tell you, you get very distended from eating too much hummus. The hummus could be... That could be a big part of the whole conflict there in the Middle East is the amount of hummus they eat, because what happens is they just get uncomfortable constantly. Gassy. You get very gassy from that.
You could if you ate too much.
Yeah. Let's saunter over to the big question of the day that everybody's asking, by the way, is what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine?
I'm writing about using computers in the schools and how it's a hoax.
How is that hoax? How is using computers in a school hoaxes? What is that even? Hasn't even come to the same sentence.
Well, the hoax part is that it's beneficial, and students want to learn on computers. They have to have computers. You got to have computers in the class, all that sort of thing. It's nonsense. Every real study of it says it's bull crap. It doesn't really help. It's great for writing papers and doing ancillary things as a tool, but as an educational aid, except as a tool in the, you know, writing and other things and looking something up on Google, it's useless. It's dumb.
So do you think that do you segregate the idea of using technology in the classroom that is that, or is it just computers versus iPads, let's say?
All technology such as an iPad or any of these things that make all these promises they can't deliver on.
What about calculators?
What about them?
I don't know. I'm trying to see where the line is. I mean,
I would say as a math aid, calculators probably fall into the category of like a slide rule. And it speeds up the process and you're going to have to use them eventually. And a calculator on a computer would have the same effect, of course. So I would cut it off at calculator.
So abacuses, slide rules, probably not good.
Abacus is great, by the way. We should go back to that.
Okay. We should go back to that. All right. Okay. So if those of you know what a slide rule is, I encourage you to go check that out. It's kind of very old school. It's double old school. But check out what a slide rule is all about and how that works. My parents learned how to do multiplication on their knuckles. You know that trick? Kind of counting the knuckles and indents in your thing. It's like 9 times 3. You go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And that would be 27. So let's see if that worked. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Maybe 27. I don't know. There's some way to do it with your knuckles. How to calculate. I don't know what that's all about.
Well, I recommend people learn how to use an abacus. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Maybe you'll do a lesson.
And
maybe
fast.
You should
and
do it
very
you should,
fast.
That's what you should do. You should do a YouTube series on how to use an abacus. That would probably sell.
I would bet even money there's already a YouTube series on how to use an abacus. I put money on that.
And by the way, if there is, just going and flashing back to last week's what John C. Dvorak was writing for PC Magazine, they're probably showing you how to do it incorrectly. Right?
It's possible.
All right. Well, then make sure you read PC Magazine where John writes. Let's take a look at the stocks. Not a game that it's a game that we play. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security at all. It's nothing more than simply two guys talking about maybe some interesting ideas. We track them. We look at them. We have some special rules of them in terms of 10% trailing stops, unless we say otherwise. All the information is available on dhunplugged.com, where you can follow it and track the performance of all this live ticking, et cetera, on a regular basis. And if it's, you decide for whatever reason to buy or sell or take any of the discussion that we take and use it for yourself, please seek professional financial advice and do your research, because we're not responsible for anything that you may lose, only the gainers and the winners. So why don't you take these? Give us a rundown.
Well, we don't have too many left, actually, but let's go over a few. Facebook Long, which was the one I used to counter Andrew's short, is doing quite well. It's up 21%. Alliance MMA, which I picked as a penny stock, has a stop at 30 cents. It's at 37 cents, which is down 25%, which is not particularly good action. But it looks like something that maybe should be considered around 37, 35 cents. If it's going to stay down there. Mm-hmm. Tesla was one of, I think that's yours, right?
Yep, that's mine.
Yeah, it's a short under Bad Mojo. And it's it's 5% up. So it's actually down. You struck, I think you had it sold at 300. It's not at 284. So that's good, doing okay. The Russian funds, the tripler and the single, are both way up. That was a good call. I should have actually bought that for real. And then we have Biotechnia Lark of mine, which is down a couple percent, and Match Group, which has been apparently kicked off the list.
Which I'm upset about because it's way up from when it was kicked off the list after the realization was that, you know, the Facebook, I had a really interesting discussion on this week's Discipline Investor podcast about this, that the Facebook dating app does not mean that their other companies are necessarily going to, it's not a one for one. They may use all the different apps, especially those poor people that just can't get a date. They need all the help they can get. So they may use Facebook and they may use Match and they may use
They
Christian
may use 10
Mingles.
Different apps.
Yeah, JSwipe, yeah. This, whatever it is.
FarmersOnly.com.
Ah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
It's
check
a jingle.
That one out. So I got this week on, we're putting on Deutsche Bank short for you.
Right? Yeah, definitely.
All right. I got too much going on to concentrate on picking a stock, by the way.
So, okay, I got another one then.
Okay.
Let's go with Eagle Point Credit Company.
What is that symbol?
This is a operation. Let me read some of the things.
Give me a symbol.
Had it. ECC.
ECC. Enter. Okay.
Yeah.
Eagle Point Credit Company.
I don't know what they do. I knew what they did, but now I don't.
I'm sure they're involved in some kind of credit.
Yeah. It has to do with... It's got to do with some sort of, I don't know if it's the same as this other operation. It's a closed end fund that deals with fixed incomes.
Okay.
It's a fixed income operation. And it looks pretty good. I like the numbers. But the only reason I really bought it is because some insiders are going in strong and it's down a lot. It's only at 18 bucks. So.
Okay, so we got insiders on that one. We got the big short is the thesis on the other one, on the Deutsche Bank.
Yeah.
Right, I'll go with that. UCD. That's on there. Okay. All right. I think it's going to wrap it up.
I think so.
All right, let me play the outro song, and then I'll fill you in all the other good stuff. We're going to get some pizza later tonight.
Pizza in New York.
Yep.
Always an adventure.
Now, that's
okay.
All right, I'll see you next week.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.